March 15th readings. Justin Martyr Dialogue with Trypho, Chapter 1. Introduction. While I was going about one morning in the walks of the Xystus, a certain man, with others in his company, met me and said, "Hail, O philosopher!" Immediately after saying this, he turned and walked along with me, his friends likewise followed him. I addressed him, saying, "What is there important?" He replied, "I was instructed by Corinthus the Socratic in Argos that I ought not to despise or treat with indifference those who array themselves in this dress, but to show them all kindness and to associate with them, as perhaps some advantage would spring from the intercourse either to some such man or to myself. It is good, moreover, for both, if either the one or the other be benefited. On this account, therefore, whenever I see anyone in such costume, I gladly approach him, and now, for the same reason, I have willingly accosted you, and these accompany me in the expectation of hearing for themselves something profitable from you." Trypho introduces himself. "But who are you, most excellent man?" I replied to him in jest. Then he told me frankly both his name and his family. "Trypho," he said, "I am called, and I am a Hebrew of the circumcision. Having escaped from the war lately carried on there, I am spending my days in Greece, and chiefly at Corinth." "The role of philosophy. And in what," I said, "would you be profited by philosophy as much as by your own lawgiver and the prophets?" "Why not?" he replied. "Do not the philosophers turn every discourse on God? Do not questions continually arise to them about his unity and providence? Is not this truly the duty of philosophy, to investigate the deity?" "The philosophers' views on God." "Assuredly," I said, "so we too have believed. But most have not considered this, whether there be one or more gods, and whether they have a regard for each one of us or not, as if this knowledge contributed nothing to our happiness. Nay, they attempt to persuade us that God takes care of the universe with its genera and species, but not of me, you, or each individual. Otherwise, we would surely not need to pray to him night and day. But it is not difficult to understand the upshot of this, for fearlessness and license in speaking result to those who maintain these opinions, doing and saying whatever they choose, neither dreading punishment nor hoping for any benefit from God. For how could they? They affirm that the same things shall always happen, and, further, that I and you shall again live in like manner, having become neither better men nor worse. But there are some others who, having supposed the soul to be immortal and immaterial, believe that though they have committed evil, they will not suffer punishment, for that which is immaterial is insensible, and that the soul, in consequence of its immortality, needs nothing from God." Trypho's request. Trypho, smiling gently, said, "Tell us your opinion of these matters, and what idea you entertain respecting God, and what your philosophy is." Augustine. Confessions, Book 5, Chapters 13-14. Sent to Milan to teach rhetoric. When those in Milan sent to Rome to request a teacher of rhetoric at public expense, I sought the position through the very same people who were steeped in Manichaean vanities, the very ones I was unknowingly preparing to leave behind. Neither of us realized it at the time, but through them, I was set on a path of freedom. The prefect of the city, Symmachus, tested me with a subject and, upon proving myself, sent me to Milan. And so, I arrived, unknowingly drawn there by thee, O Lord, and into the presence of Ambrose, Bishop of Milan, a man known throughout the world for his virtue and wisdom, thy faithful servant. At that time, Ambrose was preaching to the people with eloquence, dispensing the flour of thy wheat, the gladness of thy oil, and the sober intoxication of thy wine. Without realizing it, I was being led by thee to him, so that through him, I might knowingly be led to thee. First impressions of Ambrose. That man of God received me like a father, welcoming me with the kindness of a bishop. I soon began to love him, not as a teacher of truth, for I still despaired of finding truth in the church, but as a friend. I listened to his sermons with great interest, though not for the right reasons. My concern was not for the truth he spoke, but for the skill of his delivery. I wanted to determine whether his eloquence matched his reputation, whether it exceeded or fell short of what was claimed. I hung on his words, admiring the beauty of his speech, which was more learned but less entertaining than that of Faustus, my former Manichaean teacher. Yet while Faustus had delighted my ears, he had led me astray with deception. Ambrose, though his style was less playful, spoke words of salvation with great wisdom. But salvation was still far from me, a wicked man standing before him. And yet, without realizing it, I was drawing nearer to the truth, slowly and unconsciously. The power of Catholic preaching. At first, I had no desire to examine what Ambrose actually said, I only cared about how he said it. Yet, alongside his words, the truths he preached began slipping into my mind. I could not separate the eloquence from the message. And so, as I opened my heart to admire how skillfully he spoke, I found myself slowly beginning to see and how truly he spoke. For the first time, I realized that the Catholic faith, which I had thought weak and indefensible against Manichaean attacks, could actually be defended with reason. My old objections, which had seemed unanswerable, now appeared weaker. After hearing Ambrose explain various passages of the Old Testament, often allegorically, I understood that I had misunderstood them when I took them literally. I had been killed spiritually by my own false interpretations. I now blamed my own ignorance for believing that no defense could be made for the law and the prophets against those who mocked them. And yet, I still was not convinced that the Catholic faith was true, only that it could not be so easily refuted as I had thought. Doubts and the influence of philosophers. 25. With my confidence in Manichaeism shaken, I focused my efforts on disproving their errors. If I could grasp the reality of spiritual substance, all their arguments would collapse. But I could not. Nevertheless, as I reflected more on the nature of the world, I saw that the philosophers had far more probable explanations than the Manichaeans. And so, following the academic skeptics, I found myself doubting everything. I no longer believed Manichaeism, but I also did not yet fully believe Catholicism. If both sides had arguments, neither seemed victorious. But I knew I could not remain a Manichaean while believing that certain philosophers were closer to the truth. Yet, at the same time, I could not fully commit to these philosophers, for they lacked the saving name of Christ. And so, I made a decision, I would become a catechumen in the Catholic Church, just as my parents had encouraged long ago. I would remain there until I found certainty about where to place my faith. Thomas Aquinas. Summa Theologica, Part 1, Question 39, Article 3. Whether essential names should be predicated in the singular of the three persons. Objection. It seems that essential names should not be predicated in the singular of the three divine persons. For whenever something is predicated in the singular, it implies numerical unity. But since the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are distinct persons, it seems inappropriate to say, for example, God is one or the Lord is one when referring to all three persons. Responsio. It must be said that essential names, such as God, Lord, and Almighty, refer to the divine essence, which is one and indivisible. Since the three persons share the same divine essence, it is correct to predicate essential names in the singular when referring to them. For example, it is proper to say God is one, because the divine essence is numerically one. It is also correct to say God is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, as each person fully possesses the divine essence. However, when speaking of the persons in relation to each other, plural predication is necessary. For instance, we must say, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are three persons. The Father is not the Son, nor is the Son the Holy Spirit.